Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 8. NASDAQ Futures up 75. NASDAQ trying to make a comeback from yesterday. Crummy day yesterday for the NASDAQ. Whack, whack. Worst day since April. So we'll see if we come back today. Buy the dip. Buy the dip. That's what they say all day long on TV. Buy the dip. Not sure that it works. It has worked for like a really long time. And probably, who knows, might work for another long time. Will it work forever? That's the question. That's the question. The man with all the answers, Carl Denninger. Carl, how are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing great. Boy, I'll tell you what, those slings and arrows, that's, you know, I have my titanium armor on, and I'm ready to go.
Well, you know, you could be, I don't know his history all that much, but they had, they somehow, foolishly for them, had Carl Bass was on CNBC the other day.
Oh, my God.
Sounded like he listened to the show. The guy's talking about, yeah, these guys pumped the money supply 40%. The inflation's 40%. They're telling you it's 18. Everybody's hurting. Now they're talking about maybe it should be 2% or 3% going forward from here. Everybody's buried under this bubble. you know, whether it goes 2 or 3 from here doesn't really make any difference. What are you going to do about the mess you created? But I couldn't wait to get him off.
Well, yeah. And then you have all the people that are you know, supposedly titans of industry, particularly with housing and things like that, right? Because, you know, that's where did it end up this time? Well, places they don't like it. I mean, let's face it. Everybody in the administration, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, they love it when the inflation shows up in stock prices.
In houses, I mean, if you're an asset holder, if you got an old used car, if you've got,
well, it depends.
Baseball card, whatever it is, you're good.
Well, careful, because it depends on the asset. Okay, I mean, it's not true that for all classes of assets, ramping prices is always considered a good thing by people within the, you know, within the power structure of the government and industry. You'd think, but no, it isn't, because the problem is everybody needs to be involved in some way, whether they're a holder or a renter or whatever, of certain classes of assets. And as a result, those end up, as we know in the CPI, you know, you have these weights, right? That's supposedly the percentage of the average urban consumer's basket. And since cities have a higher concentration, urbans have a higher concentration of the population than everybody else. That's the only thing anybody ever cares about. But it's not true, because there are classes of assets that are in that basket. And when things get out of control in there, you got problems, all right? Because not just the political backlash that comes from it, but the real business impact. When people just decide they're not going to participate anymore, they've just had enough. And being on the hamster wheel and getting them anywhere. Right? I mean, there's, you know, one of the things that was interesting about the pandemic, which I don't think anybody's really put any kind of serious thought into, is that it made, there were a lot of people that just said, you know what, we're getting paid, you know, $600 a week or whatever, sit around with their finger in their butt. We're going to go hop in a van, and we're going to go live in a van, and we're going to go around the country, even though virtually everything organized in any of the Democrat-run areas was closed. My daughter famously found, while doing this sort of thing, living with her dog. And
were the national parks closed? Sorry to interrupt. I think they
to some degree. So some of the national parks got really stupid. Okay, there's a place called Angel's Landing out west. It's a very beautiful hike, and there is a section of it that is quite hazardous. Right, it's narrow. It's a sheer cliffside, and as a result of this, there is, it's not really a handrail, it's a piece of aluminum guy wire cable that's got bolts driven into the rock so you can hang on to something as you're, you know, as you're...
They got snakes?
It is sort of a deserty kind of area, so yeah, I assume there are probably snakes.
I'm out then.
Well, if you catch it at the wrong time, I mean, I've done plenty of backcountry stuff, and there's usually, you know, there are things out there that, snap, bite, growl, eat. That's part of the environment there.
Part of the allure.
I'd rather not have a close encounter with a big, hungry bear. I don't care so much about the ones that aren't hungry, but the ones that are, not so good. So anyway, they closed this because it had this section where you had to grab onto something. Well, I guess you didn't have to, but everybody did, of course. And oh my God, you might get COVID doing that. Even though it's outdoors, in full sun. You know, I mean, you want to talk about the best disinfectant there is, it's UV light, right?
Oh yeah. Well,
No. You can't do that. And then on top of that, to enforce it, they stuck trail cameras up at the beginning of the hike with a great big sign that says, we will find you if you get caught out here.
What if you slip and you grab it instead of falling over? Is that a fine?
Well, no. Mere presence on the trail beyond the point where they put the barricade was $5,000 if they caught you.
Well, you do know that in Illinois, my attorney buddy and his wife are still avid golfers, right, even though they're getting up there. But they love it, and... You couldn't ride in the same cart with somebody, even though you drove.
Oh my God!
Even though you drove in the same car there together.
You know, we had.
And you couldn't pull. You couldn't pull a pin either.
You couldn't take the pin out of
no.
The, okay, so you had to. So you had to play golf with the pin in the hole.
Yeah, and you had to reach down and grab your ball
on the green.
Though. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, which by the way, does violate USGA rules. I don't know if you know that.
I don't know that it does anymore after the COVID. Because even on the tour, they were leaving
them at that point. Well, and the reason is because if you hit a putt too hard and it hits the pin, it'll go in, whereas if the pin's not in, it'll go over the top.
Well, you could hit it with a glancing blow, and one that drops won't either. You're better off with it out.
It's considered you can't. It's one of those you can't do that things when you're on the green.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because they were doing it on the tour, too. The pins were in.
I haven't watched tour golf in so long.
You got to watch a little bit. These guys are so good. I mean, we're good. They always were.
I used to really enjoy this game, too. I mean, I've still got a bag of sticks in my, my downstairs, rec area. The thing is that people decided that, we're going to minimalize kind of our footprint, both from a standpoint of effort and everything else, right? And some of them didn't like it very much, but others did like it. Others thought that, hey, this is not bad. All right. This is actually a decent way to live. And so now you have a group of people that you're going to have to incentivize if you want them back in the workforce in a truly productive way that, is anything close to what they used to do and the amount of hustle and such that they used to have prior to COVID. You're not going to get there with, go back to the office and, make $10 an hour or whatever and rent.
Well, assuming you have some money.
Well, I'm saying, but you know what? You'd be surprised at how well that works. Assuming it's a lifestyle decision, Chief. But one of the things that You know, the assuming you have some money thing is so funny to hear people talk about, because you see all these stories about how people that are making 200 grand a year are literally living paycheck to paycheck, and so in a lot of these higher cost areas. Okay, and certainly places like Chicago and New York haven't made it any easier with the ratcheting tax environment and, you know, everything goes along with it. But it was that shift in incentives when Obamacare came in that caused me to decide that I, as long as that sort of viewpoint from the government persists, I will never do any more entrepreneurial anything, ever. And it's not that I can't get past it, assuming that the venture I engage in is successful, because I will. Okay, I know that. Been there, done that. It's not, it's just how it is. But I also know from my experience as an entrepreneur that, you know, the old saw about 9 out of 10 small businesses fail within the first 5 years. Okay, I mean, that's what they say. That's the statistics. That's not hyperbole and BS. It's actually real. I had 3 failures. The third one was good. But even there, boy, things could have gone wrong. And in the nascent, in the nascent stage, if they go wrong, you're done. You're out. you go back to being a wage slave for somebody because you have to. MCS, I literally started in a closet in a rental, in a rental apartment. Okay. No joke. I mean, that's not... people joke about doing that. That wasn't a joke. It was the truth. I had a $20 box fan keeping a computer and a stack of modems from melting in the closet because obviously there was no ventilation in there. In my bedroom, in a rental apartment. So the problem with that is that when you ratchet those costs, the first couple of years of any entrepreneurial environment, you don't make any money.
No.
Okay.
No,
yeah. I mean, ultimately, I made a lot of money. But the first couple of years, no, I didn't make any money. Every single time, I'm like, every 2 weeks, you gotta make your payroll, right? Because you got to pay your bills. You got to pay your rent and your grocery bill and the power bill and, blah, 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 blah. oh, boy. That was, and when I was running the previous iteration of MCS, which did computer support and hardware sales and things like this, in the Chicagoland area, by the way, there were plenty of times that myself and at the time the partner that I had in the operation, we made payroll 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday.
Well,
for the two of us.
I think that in my career, even though I started out at Allied Vanlines of all places, which is now closed. Well, now Pullman, which is now closed. So I'm and I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And obviously the trading floor was a place where an awful lot of people could be entrepreneurs.
Oh, sure.
And the trading floor right now is pretty much nothing. Now, that could have been done in a way that was inclusive instead of exclusive. And it wasn't. The government has been at every level so anti-entrepreneur for my entire lifetime, it's scary. It is. I can't imagine somebody starting a brokerage firm now. I can't even think of that. It's relentless how hard it is for people to start and to keep it going. And the COVID, I'm not as demonstrative on people being... in politics, I'm not as much into the hang 'em thing as some people. Not mentioning any names, Carl, but
well, you could mention mine because I kind of said I
know,
actually.
I know. What I'm saying is, but I'm a
actually, well, my mine's MGGA instead of MAGA. I just changed one letter. Make guillotines great again.
Well, let's put it this way. When people say, "Gee, Carl's out on a ledge," and I go, "Well, he's at the point where at some places," and this is I'm trying to agree with you here, so let me. So at some point, this does become personal. And we're sort of there. It's not like you pass a tax law which you think is good for everybody, And no matter what you do, there's going to be a few winners and losers. But you didn't purposely try to screw somebody. But during the COVID, I mean, how, you know, I think Pritzker, the pressures these guys were under, I'm not saying they should have succumbed to it. If you don't make things more restrictive than the governor over here, you're killing people. I mean, they were under incredible pressure by the press and people to do what they did. Now, should they have withstood it? In retrospect, sure. And probably you and I thought they maybe should have at the time. But the fact is, they didn't. But somewhere along the line, even Pritzker from the limousine that's blacked out, you can't be driving by Carl and Chief's blue jean store that's closed and go right to the Target that's open selling blue jeans. That to me becomes personal.
Well, yeah, and that was a big part of it. All right, I have a niece, only member of my extended family who's still around that I'm aware of. I mean, pretty much, you know, it's one of the things that happens as you get older, right? All your family members die because they were older than you when you were born, and obviously,
yep.
And guess what? That means they go first, most of the time. Not always, but most of the time. But she was one of these so-called essential workers. And, you know, she's a very nice gal, but, you know, doesn't have, you know, privilege, even though she's white. Gee, you know, not that doesn't have anything to do with life, right? So, but because her job was stocking shelves, she was considered an essential worker. So she has to roll out of bed every morning at 5:30 and be there at 6:00. In order to do her job. Well, okay, great. Except during COVID, the guy next door is still chucking beer bottles out of his open window at 6:00 in the morning as she's getting in her car because they're paying him to sit on his butt and drink them. All right. Now, what do you think that did to her motivation? All right, to see that for like a year. Right, every, you know, rain, shine, snow, sleet, hail, whatever, and you know she lives in the Midwest, so you get the snow with the sleet and the hail too. Every morning, like she has been doing, she gets up and goes to work because that's the job, and the guy next door is being paid to sit around and play with himself. And by the way, they both live in roughly identical places because it's, you know, it's a subdivision, so like you know the house next door to yours is probably about like yours. And she's busting her butt, and she's literally paying his bills.
Well, I we're not, no doubt. I mean, I can see myself, Carl, if something like that happened. I could see actually the both of us, even though you would never, you might say you wouldn't. I could see the both of us, when this is coming at us like a storm, closing things down for a little bit just to see where it all lands. But after months, you know, they interviewed some lady here. There was kind of a second shutdown here.
I know.
And they interviewed this lady who was, she and her husband owned his restaurant. It was out west somewhere, about 83 or someplace. And they were shutting the restaurant down. And she goes, I don't understand how come we're shutting my restaurant down again. By the way, we're probably going to go under this time. And I look across the street in the Sam's Club serving hot dogs.
Right.
You know,
right.
She goes,
or, well, well, or Costco or whatever. Yeah.
She goes, what are we doing here? I mean, are they just after us? I mean,
well, you know, it's when part of the problem I have with it is that we have discovered that essentially all of the claims that were made in terms of duration and intent and everything else were lies.
Yeah.
Okay. They weren't mistakes. They were lies. Deborah Burks has admitted in her memoir and on television that when they did the original 2 weeks to slow the spread, they had no intention of it being 2 weeks. That essentially, that Trump went out there and said 2 weeks, right? And then turned around and said to them, find me justification to do this essentially indefinitely. Now that sort of thing right there, you want to know why where people like me say, hey, make guillotines great again? It comes from acts like that, okay? Because basically what you're saying is we are playing on the fear, because nobody wants to die. I mean, come on, me included, right?
Yep.
So you're playing on the fear that that's going to happen. You don't have the science to back it up. You don't have any justification whatsoever. You're taking a political act And, oh, by the way, the proof that this was political at the outset and had nothing to do with epidemiology or anything else is the fact that here we are, we're 2 years beyond the end of this, and we still have a $6 trillion federal budget.
Yeah.
All the spending that they put on, not a single penny of it came back out when the so-called threat was over.
Well, that's, I mean, we talked about that kind of quite a bit yesterday, actually, Carl. I don't know if you listened in at all, but the difference between the 2000 and the feds of yesteryear, when they felt they needed to put money in for whatever reason, if they put too much in, they made some effort to take it out. These guys have now decided I'm sure there's people behind them are saying, no, you can't trifle with this wealth bubble. Look at how rich all of our guys are.
But geez, the screaming that you're hearing from people like within the real estate industry, okay, I mean, as I pointed out when Airbnb first showed up, and it first became a thing, I said there's the only reason this is a thing is it's an arbitrage game. This has nothing to do with a ground up, groundbreaking kind of service. And the problem with arbitrage games is that they only work, and like you talk to anybody who does this kind of thing professionally. Oh, gee, currency traders that, you know, for years and years used computers to arbitrage the slight difference between the euro and the dollar in New York versus Britain.
Well, that's what keeps it in line.
Well, guess what? Yeah, but, you know, it's to some extent, it's like picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. But on the other hand, as long as that spread is there, there's money to be made, and it's made legitimately. You're not stealing anything from anyone. You're buying and selling on an agreed basis across the board. Okay, that's fine. The problem is that there's only a certain amount of money you can make before you attract a bunch of other people to do it because it looks too easy. And as soon as there's enough people in the game, the arbitrage capacity to do this disappears. You can't make any money at it anymore.
Well, that's
yes.
That's,
but you can still do it, but it's a loser now.
But that's the whole beauty of anything you do.
That's the whole point of a market, right?
That's the whole point of a market, yeah.
Yeah, that's the point of a market. So, but now you have all these people out there screaming that this was supported. All right, and I warned people around here because, you know, when Asheville was essentially completely locked down, you couldn't eat. You couldn't go have a beer and a burger inside a restaurant.
Right.
Okay. For like 2 years after the crazy started. Around here, after May-ish, they started relaxing on things. So you have to wear a mask indoors. Well, you know what? I put the middle finger up on that. I just ignored it.
You had to wear a mask except when you're eating at the table where you're close to everybody.
Yeah, I'm like, if you'd prefer to either arrest or eject me, go right ahead. I'm not doing it. But in some places, they went much further than that. They're like, no indoor eating at all, right? And no indoor drinking, and, you know.
It depended on the situation. Apparently.
Well, it depended on the political environment.
Well, I mean, Chicago was incredibly Nazi-esque when it came to that.
It was in Asheville, too, okay? Asheville was
not a suburb, no. Suburbs, restaurants, that's amazing. They made you, you're supposed to wear your mask on the exercise at the club.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But they did, you know, they did that sort of thing down there. So what happens with all the Airbnbs and all the places here? Of course, they get mobbed, right? Because people are like, well, I'm not putting up with that crap. I can go, you know, the next county over. Okay, I don't put up with this. And so they did. But the fact is that that wasn't going to last. And I told people, I said, look, if you think you're going to get $1,000 a night for this cabin, okay, forever, you're getting it right now. Because all the surrounding areas are literally, I mean, nobody wants to rent a cabin over there because you can't go have a beer. Okay, well, over here you can. So therefore, we've tampered with the supply-demand balance. This means that the price goes up.
Carol, nobody knows that anymore. It's like people never took an economics course in the last 40 years. I mean
well, Chief, these people are now sitting on these cabins and they're looking at 50% losses in their bookings. Okay, from where they were a couple of years ago, and they bought them on the premise of having, you know, $100,000 a year of gross revenue, All right, and now all of a sudden it's 40.
Well, you're going to listen Thursday night, I believe, to a debate, and whether you listen to it or not. And you're going to talk to the former president, Donald Trump.
Chief, I'm going to have a bottle of scotch sitting next to me while I'm listening to that.
What I'm saying is, now he's going to talk about, evidently, he's going to be absolutely all over Biden regarding inflation.
Yeah, you mean the inflation he caused?
Okay, but that's what I'm, now nobody except you and I and the listeners here know that. I just did the numbers here. In Trump's, now this is the CPI, so you can't believe it for crap.
Right.
From January 17, when the man took office, to January 2021, the inflation was 8%, according to the CPI.
Yep.
January 2021 to June 2024, the latest numbers, it's been 20%. Now, we all know, so according to this stuff, since 2017, they're saying it's 28%. You and I know the number's got to be 50 easy. Okay, but that's another argument. However, in Trump's last year, from January of 2020 to January 2021, the money supply went up 40%. So there's no question. I'm not saying, that was the policy, whatever, but the entire inflation bubble was on his watch.
Well, absolutely.
It's gone up after Biden, though, too. I mean, so Biden's first couple of years, it continued to go up when it should have. But it essentially is on his watch. Now, but he's going to get away with saying that the CPI increase was under Biden's watch and not his.
And you know what? What happened to Carter?
Well,
same thing.
Well, but yeah, because matter of fact, one of my very right wing friends, young lady, she's not young anymore, but none of us are, says, I met her in a store, and she goes, I'm going through Biden's inflation just like Jimmy Carter's. And I said,
it wasn't his.
I said, do you remember Nixon's wage price controls?
there you go.
Which was two presidents before that. Do you remember on the trading floor the whip inflation now buttons when Jerry Ford was president? She goes, well, oh yeah, but everybody knows it was Carter's inflation. No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. And oh, by the way, if you want to know who set up the extraction racket that ended up as healthcare being a primary element of it, as being a fringe benefit within your within your employment. Okay, in other words, tied to your job, and therefore hidden, its cost was hidden from you. It was Nixon who did that, because when he put those wage and price controls in, the way that you could get around that and still give somebody something was to pay for their health care. A lot of people don't understand that.
You know what? We got a dash. Let's talk about that in Friday. I was going to say, when did health care become tax deductible to company? Let's save that for Friday because we got a dash.
All right, you bet.
SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 78. Be right back. Joel Unkind.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right
now. Low and Rope Bank Stocks and Jocks. After tomorrow, Ricardo on the board. S&P Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 76. This after a nasty down day for the NASDAQ, because we had NVIDIA down 13% in a few days. We haven't seen a downtick there in a while, but the last few days we have. It's up. However, it's bouncing back today. It is up 280. It was up 3. It's back to 120.95. I think it traded over 130.1 or something a few couple days ago. This is after a 10-for-1 split. Dow futures are down 48. Apple's up $1.50. Apple goes up every day now. And everybody has to, I mean, I think, what does Apple have? How many billion shares outstanding? I mean, it's incredible. Like $300 or $400 billion of market cap on in the last 3 weeks. That's kind of a lot. We're in Asia. Nikkei up 368. That's full 1%. Hang Seng up 45. So it's hanging above 18,000. It's 18,072. Shanghai, not so much. Down another 13, 29.50. They're getting whack on the mainland there. Over in Europe, the DAX down 162.9%. FTSE down 17.2. CAC around down 51.7. So FTSE's the one hanging in there. The other guys are down kind of quite a bit. Yesterday, Dow was up 260. This is weird. S&P down 16. The NASDAQ down 192. That's over 1%, 1.1%. They haven't had a move like that in NASDAQ really since April. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.23. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.39. Bond patch has been pretty quiet lately. Japan up 1 basis point to 1.00, back to 1%. Oil down 52 cents, 81.11. Brent down 52 cents, 85.49. Natural gas unchanged, 281. RBOB unchanged, 250. Gold up 30 cents, 23.44. Was up a little bit yesterday. Staying in this middle of this range here, maybe 23.10 to 23.60. Hasn't really wanted to break out to the upside, at least not yet. Silver down, up 6 cents, 29.59. Copper down 2 cents, 4.41. The U.S. dollar, 107.1 against the euro. Not much going on today, 127 against the British pound. We've got Bitcoin bouncing back a little bit, up 1,300, 61,147. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? Hey, the Cubs blew another save last night.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. right here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 75 degrees right now with a high at 91. Periods of sun, windy and hot with a heavy thunderstorm early, then again late. Thunderstorms can bring flooding, downpours, hail, and damaging wind gusts. Tonight will be breezy and with a heavy thunderstorm as well. Cloudy and warm with a low of 70 degrees. On Phoenix, we're looking at 84 degrees right now with a high at 110. Hot with sunshine and patchy clouds, and tonight will be cloudy and very warm with a thunder shower in spots with a low of 91 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, you're looking at 19 minutes. 40 minutes inbound Kennedy from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 26 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 24 minutes. On the sports in the MLB, White Sox lose to the Dodgers 0-3. The Cubs lose to the Giants 4-5. And today we got a couple of repeat games. The White Sox play the Dodgers again at 7:10 p.m. The Cubs play the Giants at 8:45. And then we also have the Diamondbacks playing the Twins at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, in the NHL, the Stanley Cup Final Game 7 was yesterday, if I'm not wrong. The Panthers beat the Oilers 2-1, capturing their first Stanley Cup, I think. Is that right, Chief?
Yep.
Yes. And that's pretty much all I got for you, man. Back
they
to you.
Up, they were up 3-0 and then went 3-3 and then finally won it.
Right.
Do we have Joel?
Yeah.
Good. How are you, buddy? How are you, man?
I'm doing good. Made it through another quad wish expiration.
Yeah. Are you gonna get
you know what today is? Do you know what today is? Today is June 25th, 2024. Did you know what two monumental events happened on that day?
You got married?
32 years ago. Nope. Married a little bit longer than that.
32 years. So that would be, when are we talking? 1992.
Well, the first thing and the less important thing is that's when Globex started trading.
Really?
Globex, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was there.
Yeah. This was at the Merck.
Well, actually, the Board of Trade with both of them. It was kind of the first thing they did together.
The main pit was at the CME, the main S&P 500 index.
Right, but all your eggs started trading a little at night too for a couple hours, and some of the stuff in the bonds they did as well.
You're pulling my leg, Chief. It was at the Merck. It was only at the Merck. I got the pen. Well, and the broiler chickens. Did you trade a lot of broiler chickens in the day?
No, but they were used to be the butter and egg exchange.
And, well, what they used. Oh, this would be good for the other show too. But they used to. We used to do it like at 10 o'clock. We would do a pool of how long there'd be trading in butter. Okay. And they go, and just at 10 a.m., the guy would come on, any trading in butter? And then there'd be a trade clock. Any trading in butter? closed. Yeah. But they started that, and then also my oldest daughter was born on that day, June 25th, 19. Yeah. So 32. Happy birthday, Dana. I know she's fat. Still 640. Well, 640 for you. But so that's it. But that's not what you guys want to hear about. You want to hear about the dip in the chips being bought.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I would I'd bet you an adult beverage. The Globex started at both places because the bands had a. Because I remember all the guys from the Board of Trade.
Globex S&P. I'll bet you. No, you're correct. I'm just thinking about the S&P pit. Yeah, they started. It was probably the bonds, the S&Ps, and the currencies.
Well, because a lot of guys wanted to come down here and drink at night, so they had their badges on and told their wife they were going to trade.
Yeah. Well, that's something that happens every day. Yeah. Hey, you know what? My wife mentioned something the other. Did you ever go over to the Merck for lunch?
No, I never went to the Merck. They were over on Wacker Drive, and I was between the CBOE and the Board of Trade. It was my home here.
Yeah,
the Merck was three blocks away.
Oh my God! You never walked three blocks for anything. And
they were those guys. They were the other guys.
You were boy. You're to make now, and now we own your ass. That's interesting. CBO group. Too bad about the flow. But anyways, my wife. The reason I asked you that is they used to have the greatest chicken salad sandwich. You remember what the name of the bar was at the Merck? I'm sure you went there.
I was never there.
You're never in the Merck bar?
Nope.
The name of the bar was Live It Up.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I knew a guy who had that on his license plate.
Yeah, who? Tommy Baldwin?
Some dude way back in the day.
Yeah. Did you ever see the Baldwin Leap?
No.
He was the bond trader. He was the biggest bond trader, Tommy Baldwin. I never saw
him. I knew there were a couple of guys that I knew that were pretty good guys. A guy named Steve Lawrence I played softball with. He was Stevie Wonder.
And wasn't there a guy, Charlie, too?
Yeah, there were some dudes.
Yeah. All right, what do you want to talk about here in the
what do you see? I mean, the politics are totally intertwined with what's going on here in the next few months, unfortunately. You see any... Are these guys... I mean, is anything, any policy statements coming out going to make anything? Has everybody already figured out who they're going to vote on and nothing's going to change?
Oh, boy. I know we always... we're trying to avoid politics.
I know, but...
I don't know what the hell's going on. You know what their policy is? And both candidates to hate on each other.
Yeah,
and that's their campaign, and it go both ways. I think Thursday is going to be very interesting. And I just have no, people. Oh, the Fed's going to lower rates, to help Biden before that. I'm not so convinced of that. If you ask me, geopolitically, I don't think can be worse. But if you have to translate into the market opinion, well, no one really seems to care. So there you go. What will happen in November is beyond my predictions. But overall market, you finally got the dip in the chips. It was bought. You look at that day yesterday, and I heard you mention it. Yeah, well, the NASDAQ pulled back, but look at the Dow. I mean, that's the thing about this market is that, and it's really hard not to be, fully invested. If you're nimble and you can move around because they're selling something, they're buying something else. That's just the way it is. There's just rotation in the market, and you got to find a way to be on that side of the rotations.
Well, that's
very, very difficult to do.
It is very difficult to do, and you just wonder when you see the deficits, and you see now we're gonna have to spend a little bit more on defense. The interest costs are creeping up. Somebody, whoever, either one of these creatures makes it in the White House, I don't see how there isn't some sort of a massive cut in spending or a huge tax increase. Come February. I mean, Trump went out last week and got in front of the CEOs and talked about a tax decrease. From what everything I've read, they're looking at him like, "What planet are you on? You're broke."
Yeah.
I mean, are we even on the right? Are we even? We're talking about it's like we're were trying to win 4 year ago election, but the times have changed. Or is it, or am I the only one who's figured that out? I don't think I am.
No, no. I mean, the election cycle, you know, we all know what that is. It's about, you know, favoring the markets in a presidential year, you know. The Democrats are supposed to be attacked on the economy. Well, I don't know how you measure the economy. I guess everyone, you know, measures it, you know, in different different ways, and definitely the wealth is not distributed evenly. But, you know, if you're just a market guy and you look at your portfolio over the last 4 years, well, you know.
Well, we had one of the ladies, Audrey and I went out for a sandwich on Saturday night, and we go to a place and go nameless, and the ladies that work behind the bar there, we know them pretty well because they're not, they're all, you know, I'm going to say they have regular jobs. They do this on a Friday and Saturday night just for a little kick on the income. And one of the ladies is a speech therapist for kids, for young kids. And, and you know, and the families that have these kinds of issues don't necessarily have a whole lot of dough.
No.
And she goes from house to house, so she didn't even really have, I don't know if she even has an office, I didn't ask her, I sounded like maybe she didn't. She goes from house to house, and she goes, I can't raise any of these people's fees. They haven't gotten a raise since before COVID. I mean, if I raise the fees, the kid's not going to be taken care of. And I've got to the point where I like every one of these kids. I'm helping them out. If I don't show up, they've got a problem. And she goes, well, I can't raise that because they don't have the dough. And by the way, I better hit the guy up here for a raise because, tell you what, my expenses are way higher than they were 3 or 4 years ago, which they are. I mean, it is so uneven, Joel. I mean, it is so uneven. It's scary. And I don't know how you ever even it out. I honestly don't. Or if anybody even wants to. I think if you're driving in the limousine on CNBC or in Washington, I don't think you even know there's a problem. Or don't care.
They don't, Chief. I don't have much else for you today. You know, we have the conference board Chicago Fed Activity Index 8:30. Not sure if that's going to be a mover. You know, everyone's looking for that sign that for sure inflation's cooling, and for sure we're not going into recession.
I'm going up to Yahoo, but I got it. I'm just on this.
Oh, there's Kenny. Hey, do me one favor though, will you? Since you guys are going to pay my buddy from Notre Dame, Monty Williams, $65 million, not to coach. Why don't you give him a buzz and say, you know, this really good money manager named Chief.
Chief? Is that Kenny in the background?
That's Kenny in the background.
It is.
Kenny, hello, buddy.
I'm sorry. I'm good. I'm sorry I interrupted. I apologize.
No, we're just
sorry. Okay. Kenny, no, I wanted to say I haven't gotten your recipes in a long time, and I haven't got you on the pre-market prep show in a long time. Are you just exclusive to Stocks and Jocks?
Absolutely not. I'd be happy to be on your show. I don't know why you're not getting my daily note. I write it every day. You must have fallen off the list. I'm happy to add you back on.
Okay, I'll be back on it. Go get him, Kenny. I don't want to cut it.
Wait a minute. Maybe you shunned him from the list.
Go blue.
I'm sure Kenny will put you back on, Joel. Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Hey, we did that stuff for you. I don't know if you got it already, but we did it
for
you.
Yes, I did. I got it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That was a huge help.
That was our friend Matt Ryan. Did it for just that. Matt Burns.
Yeah,
no, Matt does a nice job. Good kid.
Yeah, he did. No, he did a great job. It was perfect. Just because I have to make sure that I put all the proper links in there. Otherwise, you know, they'll scream and yell at me and find me because, you know.
You got to be proper.
I missed the link.
Yeah, you got to be proper. Yeah. We don't know what proper is, but we got to be it, right?
Yeah.
Unreal. So now Fed Governor Bowen, who the hell is she? Where's she from? Bowman.
Bowman. What'd she say now?
It says she's still open to raising rates if inflation doesn't improve. Why don't? Are they ever going to say they have a price level problem and it's not an inflation problem, Kenny? I mean, are they ever going to say that?
I don't think they're going to say it. And I think what's interesting now is that she made that comment, which to me says that they are still concerned that inflation is certainly not dead yet and has the real possibility of turning its head up. Very much kind of like what Neil Kashkari said 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago when he said everything is back on the table, including great heights. And then, you know, they suddenly took that off when the market started to have a nervous breakdown. Suddenly they all changed their tune. Oh, you know, then they sent Neil out again. Well, December's probably the earliest, and they calmed everybody down and blah, blah, blah. But look, I think the Fed's in a tough spot. I think that they if they lower, they run the risk of really reigniting it, and they want to hold them steady. But if it doesn't die, then the possibility of raising rates is very real. They don't want to say that because, you know, they don't want to cause chaos, you know, months before the election. Certainly the Bidens don't want that to happen months before the election, and they don't want to create that chaos months before the election. So, you know, they're trying to walk this fine line, which I think is ridiculous.
Well, it's been this for so long now, people are convinced that's all you talk about, all that, not the you, but the creatures. All you talk about is the Fed doing this, Fed doing that, but it seems to me, Kenny, and I think you might agree with me, but we'll see, that when it comes to situations like they're in right now, they can screw around with these short-term rates and pour some money back into the system. But the overall issue here with this relentless federal debt load going higher and higher and higher, and you're going to have to go out and borrow more and more and more. The direction for your longer-term rates, unless you start pouring money in or something miraculous happens, this is simple economics. If you start borrowing more and more, you got to pay more and more.
If you and I understand that, where are all these Ivy League educated scholars that are at the Fed, that are at the administration, that are at the on the economics teams? How come none of them seem to understand what you and I know? And I don't have an Ivy League education, by the way. I went to Boston University, graduated in 1983, very happy, and I understand it. So I'm not sure what, you know, the guys from Harvard and Yale and Stanford don't seem to understand, because they're all on the Fed, they got PhDs, they're in the administration, yet nobody can understand why this is a problem, which is amazing to me.
Maybe they do understand it, and they just talk around it because they don't want to see it.
Well, okay, great. And where's that going to get us?
Yeah, where's that going to get us?
At some point, it's going to blow.
Yeah, right? I mean, I don't.
It's going to blow.
I mean, I can't believe now that they're getting away with long-term rates at 4.3 when the inflation is still at least 3, and it looks like the debt goes up $1 million every 34 seconds. I mean, it's like going over Niagara Falls, for God's sake.
It's crazy to me. It's absolutely crazy to me, and I think that. You know, she's going to start bringing, last week, you know, we had a couple of auctions last week. Some of them were better received than other ones, but you can see the nervousness and the angst, right? And it's not a question of, are there going to be buyers for the U.S. debt? There will always be buyers for the U.S. debt. It's just that what price does it clear at, right? The buyers are not going to stand in front of a moving train. They'll bid lower, which will send yields higher, and that's going to be, you know, that's going to be when the rubber hits the road. Everyone goes, oh, geez, what did we do? Oh, I guess we spent too much. We should cut our spending. We should, you know, we're going to go into austerity mode. That's what I think we're going to end up having to do.
Well, the only reason I think that the 10 and 30-year rates are where they are is because whenever they go up, the Fed starts buying them.
Exactly.
And basically shoves your trade where the sun don't shine.
Right. Exactly.
It's not like, you know, I thought, Kenny, when the 10-year got down to 1.5%, it was by far the single best bet in trading since it was 14% and you wanted to short it, right? I mean, it had to go up, but I was probably long interest or short bonds for my clients, I'm going to say 15 times.
Yep.
We might have made money 9 of them. But we got stuck on 6, where it looked like it was starting to head, and all of a sudden the Fed came in and bought them, and I'm sitting there going, all of a sudden you got stuck right where you didn't want to get stuck. I mean, it was very difficult. You couldn't just short those bonds and say this is the best trade. I guess you could have and taken a trip to Mars and back, and you'd have been okay. But it was very uneven because the Fed kept fighting it. They were the buyers.
Who was it that said, I saw the headline and I have to go back and I have to read the story. Somebody came out the other day, yesterday I think it was, and I don't know if it was a Fed person, who said that they now are admitting, recognizing the fact, I think maybe it was Janet Yellen, that going to zero rates and then holding them there for 16 years was a clear mistake. It was a clear mistake, and it was somebody who's going to make the headlines. Somebody at the Fed or somebody some economist, someone that had been pushing it, pushing it, pushing it, and suddenly then doing a reverse, you know, saying that was a big mistake. And I think it was a big mistake. You and I know it was a big mistake. Keep talking about it.
I'm gonna hit you up with this because I love it when first of all, you know, I agree with you, but I got to drag some more knowledge out of you because I know it's there. I'm going to say something really stupid, Kenny. A mistake for who?
You're going to say what?
A mistake for who, exactly?
Okay, okay.
Well, that's a question.
You're going to stay cool?
No, I said a mistake. She said it was a mistake. And I said, is a mistake for who, exactly?
It's a mistake. Yeah, yeah. Well, in the end, I think what she means, I go back and I read the story. In the end, I think it was a mistake for monetary policy, and not only in this country, but really global. Because remember, all these countries, some went negative. Remember, some of those countries
Can you imagine what the balance sheet looks like of the euro when they were buying this crap at negative interest? I mean, some of that stuff, they must have bought stuff at 150 that's trading 80.
Yeah, I know, right? And so the mistake is going to be, are they going to take responsibility? No, but the mistake will have been, you know, this was a mistake for global monetary policy for all the countries involved, and you know, it'll be a blanket statement. But is anyone going to take responsibility? Is Ben Bernanke going to stand up and go, it's my fault, or Janet Yellen say it's my fault, or Jay Powell say it's my fault? No, none of them.
Well, why did Greenspan go to 1% in the 90s? He had no business doing that.
Right, he had zero business doing that. Greenspan, by the way, in my opinion, is at the root of this whole problem.
Without a doubt,
he's at the root of the great financial crisis.
Without a doubt,
Clinton.
But the follow-up on my question is, and again, this is being a little bit divisive. if you and I are like regular creatures, and they went to zero interest rates, what Janet Yellen didn't mention, if it was her, is they failed miserably in driving the rates down to every man. You and I, our credit card rate might have gone from 21 to 19, but
that's right.
We still were stuck. It didn't help. I don't think the firm that has the five plumbing trucks and now needed six, if you dropped it, Dodd-Frank. Now the guy who goes to get another loan for his plumbing truck not only has to pay probably 8%, he's got to sign a personal guarantee, which nobody else, and yet other people are borrowing at 2% and 3%, which was below the rate of inflation, and they have so much money. The reason why Amazon and these other places, not only were they innovative and did the right stuff, they were able to borrow at 2% when nobody else could. I mean, why do you think these baseball and football teams are going for this much money? I mean, it probably made the single biggest split in the haves and the have-nots in the history of the world, not just this country.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree 100%. I agree 100%. And I think most people agree 100% that ended up being the case, right?
But it wasn't a mistake for them. It was great. And I think they knew it. I think, Kenny, when you talk about the Harvard people not knowing, I think they knew that exactly.
Well, okay. Then you know what? Then shame on them, because if they knew it exactly and they knew it's a problem and they knew it wasn't right, then shame on them for being part of the Fed, for pushing that narrative, for pushing that policy, right? Because look at the position they put the rest of the country in. The rest of the country is in.
I don't think they care.
Well, clearly, I don't think I agree with you. I don't think they do.
I'm like you, Kenny. I'm a dumb kid from the South Side sitting in Milton Friedman's class in 1975, and the guy's talking about one of the worst things about inflation is how uneven it is, how some people benefit and some people don't. If you just walked in and you gave everybody else $2 when they had $1, and he goes, and everything got indexed like a stock split, it wouldn't make any difference. But that's not what happens. Some people can raise prices, some people can't. Some people get the money, some people don't. He goes, that's why you have to be careful and never let it happen. Now, this is 1975. You can't tell me these other idiots that with these advanced degrees don't know that.
Well, isn't that what they study in all these advanced
degree classes? That's what I'm saying.
Harvard and Stanford.
Well, they should. Then they know it. They know it. Yeah. I can't believe they're at. I mean, in fact, Carl, who was just on, went to see some. You know, Carl writes all his stuff, and he was writing some stuff about how this policy was going to screw up, you know, the budget deficit or something. It was something the medical thing, and he meets these two staffers. And these guys go, "What are you telling us? We know all this stuff." Okay, then.
Right.
Okay, then.
No, I hear you.
I mean, but the question is, how does every man have any power left? I mean, the only power we may have had, you know, and I've been a huge union guy, was the fact that unions had somewhat of the same agenda as the middle class. Now, whether they did it on purpose or just landed that way, I don't know. But who talks for us, Kenny?
Well, that's the problem. No one really talks for us. That's the problem. They all tell us they talk for us. But in the end, do they talk for us? They don't. They absolutely don't.
I mean, every single guy who's run in the last 8 presidential elections talks about how strong the middle class is.
Right.
You know, it's so important to them, and the middle class has gotten eviscerated for the last 8 presidents. I mean, if they tried to do it, they couldn't have done any worse, could they?
No, they could not have done any worse. I was out last night with a friend of mine who, you know, lives in New Jersey, works in New York City, has a decent job, single, makes a decent amount of money, right, as a base salary. And he still tells me how he continues to struggle, and he's living, you know, on his credit cards, and his credit card debt has exploded because the cost of living is so expensive. First of all, he gives 50% away, 50% of what he makes, he gives away to the state because that's what they take here in New York, right? 50%.
Yep.
So if you make $150,000, $75,000 is right away going to the state. So now you got $75,000 left, and now you got to deal with, you know, the rising cost of insurance, the rising cost of food, the rising cost of your car payment, the rising cost of, you know, everything where you live. And here's a guy who said to me, I'm choking on credit card debt because it's so expensive to live here. And I'm a young guy who makes a fair amount of money, and I still can't do it. Right? Can you imagine if he had a wife and kids and a mortgage?
Well,
which is exactly the problem.
Kenny, I think most people, this is one of the, we'll run over for a second because we did find Joel, if you don't mind. The idea that you and your wife, you sit there and you go, okay, we can afford, we're doing this, whatever we are. I'm a plumber, she's a nurse, we've saved up this money, we can afford a house that's, you know, if we stretch a little bit, we can afford a house that's $375,400. You know, we got a car, we, you know, we can make the other one go a few more years. Hopefully there's we don't need a new roof, any of that kind of crap. Everybody stretched a little bit. But but now if they made twice as much, and now they're going to buy a house for $600 in another place.
Right.
And now they have the two car. Even though they allegedly have more money, they're stretched the exact same amount. They're just as liable to a 10% increase or an emergency room visit as really the person who's making half of that.
That's right. There's no catching up. Is the
point, no
right? There's no catching up. And by the way, to your point, I'd like to know where in New York City you're going to find a house for $375,000. You're not.
No.
You're not even going to find an apartment for $375,000.
No. Where Audrey does her stuff out in Orland, I'm going to say that's the starter spot is almost 400. Because what's the mean is 410. So if you're looking for someplace a little nicer, you're in the mid fours, high fours. You know, you're in the burbs. I mean, you're not in New York City, but you know, you're in the burbs. And if you wanted something nicer, you're talking, you know, 556.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
And then all the expenses that go along with it, meaning the real estate taxes, which are all going up.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then the maintenance and all that stuff, right?
Well, I was reading here in Illinois, we're $4.05 for gas in the burbs, and we're $5 in the city. Audrey was just up in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, and it's $3.05, and I guess down south it's under $3. We just raised the gas tax here in Illinois again. We're like 98 cents.
Yeah. It's
unreal.
It's absolutely nuts, which is going to be interesting to see how this all gets addressed tomorrow night as a debate. Are they going to ask these questions? Are they going to put Biden, really, are they going to put his feet to the fire and ask him to explain it or not? Or is all he's going to do is he's going to just talk about how Trump's going to, you know, destroy the country and destroy the world and destroy this and destroy that?
Well, I mean,
are they going to talk about substantive issues?
Maybe either one of them. Are they going to make it through the debate? Both of them are degrading so fast, I can't even... I tell you what, they didn't. There's a reason why they didn't want RFK on the dais with them.
No kidding. And to think, this is for the U.S. This is the best we got. Just think about that for 1 minute. These two are the best we got. It's embarrassing.
Kenny, I real quick, we know when we get a dash, we'd get the hell on. But my mom's been dead 17, 18 years, right? I miss her every day, and we used to go to breakfast every week. And I remember sitting there. Mom was real bright. I mean, she read her papers every day and all kinds of stuff, and still was going to school when she got cancer. And anyway, Bush is running against Kerry. So she says to me, how, Tom, can we have two guys running for office that are both C students and both were laying naked in a coffin staring up at dead animals with that skull and bones thing? She goes, can't we do better than that? What if she saw these two buffoons?
Can you imagine?
She said, can you imagine? Can you imagine? And Bush and Kerry are light years. Take more competent than one of these guys.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, the background anyway, whether they're more competent or not, Bush was not the best. I mean, there's a guy that he ignored health care for 8 years. I don't even know how he managed to do that. He complains about Obamacare. And by the way, I'm not real keen on how it worked out, too. But the other dude ignored it for 8 years when it was what we knew was a building problem.
Yes.
When in doubt, just ignore, Kenny. Ignore. And then deny.
Right, because if you ignore it, it doesn't really exist, and it just goes away.
And then you can just deny. Take care. Hey, by the way, Dan Janine is going to be in town Thursday. I get to see him.
Oh, nice. Great. Yeah,
and we'll talk about you, because he gets to see you once in a while.
I'm going to get myself out to Chicago and sit down with you live and do this in person.
I would love it. I would love it. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 70. Be right back. Very quick break. Professor Helsner.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Money. Get away.
Hello, Homer Broadcasting Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 79. We're currently buying the dip. The dip being in NVIDIA and a couple of the chip companies, although the rest of the market was not weak yesterday at all. Matter of fact, transportation average was real strong. IBM was up over $5, so there was a lot of winners in the big down day in the NASDAQ. Professor, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Been busy.
What have you been doing? You've been busy.
Well, it's the end of the year, and in New York, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it seems like every 2 days there's a field trip. So Thursday, I think it was. I rode the subway with my triplets, fourth grade class. We went to the Museum of Natural History and hung out there.
It has to be. Where is that in New York? I've not been the one there.
It's Central Park.
Okay, is it nice? I mean, is it a real
Well, it's cool. Yeah. It's really cool. We had a good time. For the most part, it seemed like a zoo without live animals, because there were a lot of stuffed animals, right?
Yep.
Behind glass. But I think what the kids liked the best was the big model of the blue whale, because I was taking pictures from the floor of them holding the blue whale up, and it's just massive, massive blue whale. I thought it was interesting that it kind of felt like a zoo with frozen animals for the most part.
Do you guys have the dinosaur things going?
Yeah, we did go see the dinosaurs, and Utah has a really good dinosaur museum as well. I think they enjoyed the dinosaurs in Utah more. Maybe as the way they were laid out where you could walk underneath them and stuff.
Yeah, but they had one here, and she was, well, the name, we should give her a female name. She was famous forever, and then I think they got somebody bigger and moved her somewhere else and got somebody bigger in the thing. But it was all the skeleton. You walk in, the thing is massive.
Yeah. Well, the head was only the head was tiny. I told my kids, look how small that dinosaur's head is relative to the body.
Yeah, but his head was still pretty big.
It was big.
Yeah.
Relative to the body.
Did they have any special shows? I mean, the last time I was at the Natural History, a long time ago, my buddy had one of the hospitals that he was on the board, so he had to get a table for the thing. And I saw this thing about he had a special thing that was wandering around the country on gold. So I said I was going for a drink, and I snuck away for 45 minutes. And I just ducked into the gold exhibit. I could have spent
2 days there. It was absolutely fascinating about how where gold starts, how it gets there, how you mine it, blah blah blah. And when they talk about a vein of gold, it actually is, because it's down way to hell down beneath the ground, and it gets so hot that it essentially works its way up, because gold doesn't expand or contract or something, right? That's why you use it for teeth and things like that, because it doesn't. If your body gets warm and cold, it hangs with it. It moves just as your body does, so it doesn't get smaller and fall out of your head, type of thing. So it essentially, under great force, scoots up under the fissures in the rock, just like blood flows through your vein.
Wow,
when your heart pumps,
that's cool.
When your heart pumps, and your veins are real tiny, and all of a sudden your heart's pretty strong, and it gets to your fingertips and everywhere else. Well, that's what you'll see, is you'll see a vein of gold that basically irped up from below a gazillion years ago. And you're not going to see a big block of gold in the wall of the mine, right? It's going
to
be...
It's kind of like how blood gets pushed back to your heart.
Yeah, exactly.
And muscle movement.
But they talk about how much has been mined and how over the years, and I think it's what? The entire amount of gold would fit in an Olympic swimming pool or two Olympic swimming pools? I mean, it's not... it's not like it's a lake full or anything. Ricardo, why don't you check that out? So I'm not a blithering idiot here. How much gold has been mined forever? I think it would fit an Olympic swimming pool or two or three or something. Anyway, but did you guys have? There was no special shows. You just went to the one.
What we did was a fourth grade class, right? So we ended up spending about 40 minutes in the butterfly room, which is like 98 degrees and 120% humidity.
Oh god,
it was rough. But yesterday we went on another field trip, and it was to the movie theater just down the street from the kids' school, and we watched Inside Out 2, one of the new kids' movies that my son says grossed $144 million during his first weekend. He's a 10th grader.
Wow.
I mean, he's a 10-year-old in fourth grade, and he knows all the box office halls.
God. So you guys in New York, a field trip is not remotely, say you're going to a field.
No. We went to a field trip last year, and we just went to Applebee's to have lunch. But they made it a field trip by having somebody on the crew walk them through the kitchen.
God.
So I've been on all kinds of field, quote unquote, field trips. In my day, a field trip was we got on a bus. We rode like an hour and a half to Boise, Idaho, and we went to the old state penitentiary, or we went to Silver City.
You gonna take kids to the jail?
Yeah, it was pretty. That was pretty fascinating, man. The old penitentiary. I remember that. It was in fourth grade.
Well, I suppose next time to Frisco. One of these days, I'd like to take a trip to Alcatraz, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, well, one year we went at Bruno Elementary. We went to the Idaho Symphony. I didn't even know they had one.
Oh god! Every state's got a symphony, I think. Even Idaho.
I didn't know we had one in Idaho. We may not even have one now. I don't know.
Unbelievable! Hey, got to hit you up on some. We were just talking to Kenny a little bit around. I don't know if you were listening in, but is the Fed? I think they're on the precipice of losing control, and maybe the long term rates now become the bugaboo, and not the short term rates. Am I even close with that, or no, Professor? I mean, or am I talking 40 years ago?
Well, I think the Fed is. I think the Fed wants to inflate, and I think it would be lowering interest rates if it could. But under the new dynamic of the Fed, the new monetary policy that was added in 2008, interest on reserves. We talked about this a lot.
Yep.
That's basically how they set interest rates. Now they just do it through dictate, right? They just say we're going to pay 4.5% on reserves, and banks can hold them on reserve at whatever it is, 4.5%, or they can lend them out to somebody, right? So that's essentially what it's doing now. It's just issuing a dictate on what interest rate it's going to pay for those reserves, and then it can buy and sell whatever it wants.
Are they keeping the banks
reserves and system?
Are they keeping the banks afloat by doing that?
Well, I think what they're doing is they're bottling up the inflation. They bottle up that inflation that they create when they buy a bunch of securities from banks. I mean, they can buy as many as they want, and they can sell as many as they want with the size of their balance sheet. So it allows them to purchase these securities, which is great for the government. It allows them to buy these securities without affecting changes in the federal funds rate, because before it used interest on reserves, if it bought a bunch of securities, that would have pushed interest rates down and would have caused the money to fluctuate up, right? So before interest on reserves, the Fed could either target interest rates or target the growth of money. It couldn't be both at the same time. All right,
when you say this, I think a fairly good, if not pretty good, idea of what you're talking about. But let's back up here, because this is very complicated stuff, and I want to make sure the listeners are at least with us on. Give me a minute and a half, and I'll explain what the Fed funds rate, I'll use the term, used to be. In those days, nobody wanted to go to the discount window and borrow money from the Fed. That was considered a no-no. You were a bad boy if you had it. That was your last resort, right? Not because they wouldn't do it.
But it was higher. It was a higher rate.
Yeah, it was a higher rate. So the idea was, if a guy like Hal would dig into his pockets and writes a check from one of his banks to another for like $200 million, all right? Well, the first bank is liable to be short reserves that night because Hal just withdrew $200 million. But the second bank now has $200 extra. So the first bank is going to say, hey, we need $5 million overnight to make our reserve stuff. And banks were always borrowing money amongst themselves, which is nothing wrong, because money's changing hands every day, right? This is not, it's not insidious, it's not sinister. Matter of fact, it's a sign of a good banking system, right, Hal, when that happens. And so, but the Fed controls the amount of money in the pool. So if they were to draw a bit of money out of the pool, Bank A is going to call Bank B and say, okay, what's the federal fund rate tonight? And the guy, it might have been 2.5 last night, and the guy goes, you know, we're a little tight. It's got to be 2.7 tonight. Now, we're talking about a rate overnight, you know, so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the difference between 2.5 and 2.7. I mean, it's real money, but it's not, it's not that much different. It's not like you're going to say no. So.
Also, that rate is annualized, too. They're not
right. You're not paying 2.7 overnight. You're paying 2.7 over a year divided by 360, right? Is what you're paying overnight, correct?
Yeah.
So if it's $100 million, $100 million times 2.5% divided by 360. That's what you're paying.
Yeah.
And why do they always use 360 and not 365? They always did, right?
Well, I think it was just made it math easier, because you didn't have these you had to do it on the fly, right?
Yeah. But
put into your phone.
But that was always the dynamic. You divided it by 360 and not three. Anyway, so
it's a nicer number.
Yeah. So that's the federal funds rate. So when the Fed says they're raising the federal funds rate, what they're saying is they're going to suck enough money out of the pool so that within a week or two, the federal funds rate is more like 2.5 than it was like 2. But it's never going to be 2.5 exactly. It's going to be 2.48, 2.49, 2.51. But they're saying they always will mention, if you pick it up, they're going to say our target rate has gone from 2 to 2.5, which means they're going to try and maintain, by the New York Fed putting money in and out, every day they're going to try and make this federal funds rate, the rate at which reserves change hands among the member banks, as it would be to target at 2.5. And then long ago, when they started putting this money in with COVID, even before that, they started pouring money in, and now all of a sudden, the excess reserves, banks are kicking those back to the Fed. So even though they raise the money supply, say, 20% in a month, the place can't absorb that much. So maybe 15% of it, or 12 or 10, gets kicked back to the Federal Reserve at night, and where the federal funds doesn't even exist anymore. Actually, that number, one of the Fed guys told me, was called M0.
Yeah.
The amount of money, and it got so bad in early COVID, M0 was bigger than M1.
Yeah, wow.
They
printed a lot of money.
Which is absolute insanity. So now, these banks were actually paying you zero interest on this money, and then they're turning around and dropping it back at the Fed at like 1% or 1.5%. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's better than sharp stick in the eye, right? They essentially, they essentially floated these guys. So if you're Harris Bank here in Chicago, or BMO Harris now, if they got like $3 billion extra, and they're not paying you squat on it, they're turning around and getting 1% from the Fed overnight. Well, even you and I can make money doing that, right, Hal?
Yeah.
Now, can all the small banks do that too or not? I don't think they can. Can they? A state bank can't do that, can they?
Well, I mean, if they have reserves in the system, I would think that they can earn an interest rate on it if they're not lending it out to people. I don't know why they wouldn't be.
But I bet the state bank cannot access the Fed at night and deposit money. A national bank, maybe they all can, or maybe they got to be a certain size. I don't know.
But if that's the case, it sure is anti-competitive, isn't it? Puts those small banks at a disadvantage.
That's why if you go into a bank anymore, they don't. Even a bank like Lakeside, who I do stuff here and they used to sponsor the show. They're really good people. They've got a lot of branches. I mean, their shtick, hell, is they're in all these ethnic neighborhoods. They have people that can speak 26 languages that are their tellers. I mean, they got in Chinatown, they have a place they can speak. They have somebody who can speak every dialect. Anyway, that's their shtick. But and if I went over, I said to our lady, who's been our banker forever, Fanny, I said, Fanny, you guys even like do car loans? She goes, well, we would for you, but no, we don't like have a vice president of car loans and say that's what we do. And that's why everybody gets it from the dealer. Now, banks, they're out of this business. They just get this money for nothing and kick it to somebody else.
Yeah. I had a friend that actually worked at the Fed in Michigan. I mean, she worked at a bank in Michigan, and her job was to on the wire people with other banks.
So she would do the wires, the wire transfers?
Either lend out reserves extra. This was 2000. Yeah, she would lend out the money that they had in excess of the reserve requirement, or she would arrange to get the loan so the bank could meet its requirement.
Okay.
She was a classmate of mine at Washington State back in 2001.
Okay, yeah. That's
what she did before she got her PhD in economics.
Well, that's one of the guys at the Tripoli, that's what he did. He did federal funds all night. And then he said, as soon as COVID started, he retired. He goes, there's no Fed funds. He told me one night the interest rates got... he said he arranged a loan one night for was it 40, 50, 80 million dollars, some huge number. The interest earned didn't cover the wire transfer cost.
Wow.
Here, let me borrow $80 million overnight. By the way, I'm giving you like 48 cents for it. Okay. you get to these ridiculous numbers. Meanwhile, you and I are paying 25% in a credit card.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's kind of crazy. It really is.
I mean, it's really bad management on their part, I think. I mean, they can get up.
This is what I
go ahead.
I read an article on the Mises.org. They put out a full-page advertisement on the Wall Street Journal talking about how asking the question, the title of the article is Who Needs the Fed, right? And in the article I didn't even know this, but when you look for it, you can't find it anywhere on the internet. You have to really do a very specific search for it. But I learned that this act, the Humphrey-Hawkins Full Employment Law, it was modified, I think, in the early 80s, late 70s. It modified the original, the Full Employment Act, and it stipulates that the Fed needs to have its target should be 0%. But the Fed has never set a 0% inflation target. It's currently setting 2% target. I thought that was really interesting that it was instructed to the Fed was instructed by Congress to maintain a 0% inflation target, and it's never ever had that as a goal. And I don't think the law has since been updated to reflect the Fed's current 2% target for inflation. So the Fed, if you really think about it, is violating the law in its inflation targeting.
They don't care. No, nobody cares about the law anymore.
Well, we do.
Well, I mean,
the little guy does, man.
The little guy does. So you think that, look at the administration of the Supreme Court. You can say what you want about those guys, but they said, hey, lay off the student loan forgiveness unless it comes through Congress. They haven't stopped.
If you legal for 10 minutes, you leave your car, you come back, and you got a $200 ticket, they're going to enforce that.
Yeah.
They're going to make you pay it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's totally crazy, but nobody pays any attention to this stuff.
But ignore a 0% target for inflation and create the business cycle, create the housing bubble of 2006 and 7, create the current housing bubble, and man, it won't even be audited. Really, there's two sets of laws. There's the law everybody at the bottom end, and then the laws that aren't enforced for people at the in the top 1%. You know, so it's definitely not equal protection of the law.
I mean, there's laws all over the place. Look at the gun laws in Chicago, and also when I did my concealed carry class, evidently way over my pay grade for guns, but there's a you can have a 10. What do you put in automatic? There's eight bullets in there, 8 or 10 or something. Well, there's actually another clip you can put in there that's 12. Well, it's illegal in Chicago. Name me anybody who's ever gotten arrested for having a 12 clip in their automatic gun that he's probably not supposed to have in the first place. I mean, what's the point of even having the law? But here, when you talk about the 2%, I'm going to go back to Andy and Mayberry here, Al, and if you look at, I'm going to say one of the, well, in terms of economics, not necessarily in being alive, because God help you if you had heart trouble or cancer or something. I'm looking at the years 58 through 68. All right, and if you look at the CPI back then, when I think the CPI actually was a legit number, what would you think the total inflation was in that 10 years? Yeah. Are you there?
I think we just lost him, actually.
Okay. Well, why don't you drag him back?
Well, actually, no, he's
not. All right.
There you go.
I got my internet got kicked out. Sorry.
All right, so I'm asking you, between January 1958 and January 1968, what do you suppose the total inflation was in that decade?
58 to 68?
Yeah.
Total from 58 to 68?
Yep.
I don't know, maybe 10, 12%?
20, so 2% a year.
Okay, wow. That's not
so
too bad.
So now the difference there is, I would guess that if I spent some time, which I should have before I started this conversation, I'm gonna guess that the wages went up 3 to 3.25, maybe 3.5 per year.
Yeah.
So when these guys talk about this 2% inflation, they're talking about probably the single best in terms of economic growth, certainly in the cities in this country, where inflation was 2%. So if you bought a house in 1958, it's up in price some by 68, right? You'd be made money on the house. But by the way, everybody's making a 3% raise, or most everybody, so you can handle the inflation and you're still gaining on it, and yet there is a little bit of asset creep, which people with assets want. So it's almost economic nirvana. And as Milton Friedman used to say, the biggest problem with inflation is when you first start it out, it feels so good. It's like your first beer.
Yeah.
You know, but if you keep going, it causes problems. It's uneven, it's everything else. But if you can do that, if you can manage an inflation rate at 2% a year and never get greedy and have, you know, people's wages go up even more than that, it doesn't get any better than that. But how do you manage that?
Here's a problem with the 2%. All those bonds that are being bought and sold by the Fed are being bought and sold by the New York Fed. The New York Fed has a monopoly on the buying and selling of these government securities. Before I think that law changed. All the Federal Reserve banks after World War One were buying and selling. I think they were mostly buying securities, and the Fed saw interest rates fall and the money supply grow, and then it said, "Oh wow, that's a cool phenomenon. We're going to give that power to the New York Fed." So if you have a 2% inflation goal for the United States, but all that buying and selling is being done in New York City by the New York Fed, you have this uneven distribution of that newly printed money. Who's it going to benefit? Well, the financiers of New York City, right?
Well,
so I think that can help explain that in the geography of New York City.
Yeah, but it's not just, if you're going to start the story, we got to finish the story, because when that happened, Carl, right now I don't think it matters who does it. There's only 9 primary vendors, right? In other words, right now, if the St. Louis Fed also did that, it doesn't matter. They only sell it to 9 people, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And it's probably, what, 6 of the 9 or 3 of the 9 do most of the work. So they're going to sell it to Jamie Dimon and City. Those are going to get Goldman Sachs. They get all of it, and they get to sell it to other people, right? And they get a commission both sides.
Yeah.
That's not a bad do.
Yep. What I'm saying is, though, most of the benefit probably accrued in New York City over that time horizon, right? Now, you know, today is, you know, different, but before, you know, technology, when, you know, people were using slide rules to make interest rate calculations, you know, I would suspect that a lot of that benefit accrued in New York City, right? And so maybe that helps explain how crazy the real estate market is here. I mean, the real estate market here is almost set up so that people fail in their mortgages, because the state is getting a mortgage tax when the loan is inked. You know, they're getting their property tax, which is a mortgage unto itself here in New York City, and it's worse out in Long Island. And they're doing 5% loans, down payment loans, on mortgages in New York City. I mean, that's really the only way people can afford.
Well, you can
buy a house here,
but you can get away with all that stuff. I mean, we talk about the great migration, the African American people from the South for the factories in Chicago.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know what life was like down there, but in terms of being able to buy a place or something, to get some land, I mean, I don't think they were treated all that well. So that enters it, not just economically, but. But I mean, you come to Chicago, it's somewhat polluted, it's somewhat crowded. You know, you get a house, you put up with that crap because you're making $10 an hour, or down there you're making $2. But in New York, if I'm working for Goldman Sachs and I'm making $800,000 a year, guess what? I'm the guy paying $5,000 a month for the crummy little apartment. And because I got to be here, because nowhere else am I making $800,000. I mean, if all of a sudden the salary at Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs goes to $80,000, guess what? I'm not there anymore, right? I mean, it's one follows the other. That's why Chicago's having so much of a problem now. We got all these empty property, all this empty. Nope. Unless you're really locked into some law firm or something like that. I mean, there's a few people still in the trading industry. Chicago is not basically puking out that kind of jobs and money. That's why, yeah. I mean, here, nobody wants to pay $8,000 for an apartment. Why? How could you?
Yeah.
So I mean, look what guys are willing to pay for a Winnebago up in the oil fields when they were paying guys $50 an hour, right?
Yeah.
Any place I can put my head, I'll pay for it, because look what I'm making. It's one follows the other, I think. Am I wrong there?
Well, you know, in New York, it's really crazy, because if you buy an apartment here, a condo, not only do you have the property tax, which is probably going to be about $1,000 a month,
that's
and
cheap.
A mortgage.
Compared to here,
$4,000 a month.
Yeah,
you're also going to pay an HOA, which is probably $1,000 to $1,400 a month. I mean, it is unbelievably expensive.
We've got suburbs here that Audrey and Nancy do business in, that have had, well, I'll say Olympia Fields, maybe Flossmoor, some on the south side that had, maybe some big apartment, not apartment, a big strip mall. You know, like a big Lincoln Town Square or something like that. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, those things, these people, some of these areas, the mortgage is less than the taxes.
Wow. Think about it. You pay it off, and you're basically paying two mortgages, one to bank of the state. It's crazy.
Without a doubt. I mean, you can sort of justify it if the schools are good enough where your kids go to school there. But if you live in a place and the schools are crummy and you got to go to private school on top of it, I don't know how you do that. S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 66. Again, the big thing was NVIDIA was down a few days. So yesterday we had the NASDAQ down, the Dow up, and the S&P down a little bit. Crazy day. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jacks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures.
There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks with Jax. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 7. We've been up all morning here. We're having a bounce back at some of the chip stocks. Even though Fed Governor Bowman says she's still open to raising rates, should the need arise. So there you go. I'm not sure she's even a voting member, but anyway, that's what she said yesterday. They're all out talking different stuff. They used to call them trial balloons, Ricardo. We'll see what this one sounds like. See what the backfill is. Nah, we won't do that one. We'll do something else, right? We're in Asia. If they ask Hal about this in a second. Nikkei up 368.1%. Hang Seng up 45.2%. So hanging above 18,000. 18,072. They've been getting clobbered. Shanghai, however, continuing going the other way. On a 29.50, they're down about as low as they were when the Chinese government came out and said they're going to prop the market up. So they better reprop here, or else it might keep going. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 195. That's over a percent now, 1.1%. FTSE only down 19.2%, so the DAX is what's doing the big damage here. CAC around down 60.8%. Yesterday in the U.S., again, a very mixed market. Dow up 260. A lot of that was IBM, up almost $6. S&P down 16. This was yesterday. And NASDAQ down 192, which is 1.1%. So the NASDAQ was clobbered, while the other two guys not so bad. Well, Dow was up. Bonds. Down 2 basis points, 4.23. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.39. 10-year to Japan, up 0.1 to 1.00, right on the number, 1%. That's interesting. We got back up there. Oil down 44 cents, still over 80, 81.19. Brent down 40 cents, 85.61. Natural gas unchanged, 2.80. We've got gold now down 390, 23.40, still kind of in this low to mid 2300s. Silver up 2 cents, 29.55. We got the U.S. dollar pretty much unchanged, 107 against the euro. And where are we? It is exactly unchanged, 127 against the pound. And we've got Bitcoin bouncing all today, up $1,400, 61,208. It's been getting clobbered the last few days. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. It's raining.
Morning, Chief. It is raining. It's looking pretty bleak, not going to lie to you, out here in beautiful Chicago.
I'd turn back if I were you.
Is it what?
I'd turn back if I were you.
Yeah, no. 7:37 a.m. right here, 75 degrees right now with a high of 91. There is a thunderstorm ongoing right now. Apparently, it's not looking too good outside, so be aware of that. There is also a severe thunderstorm warning today. Periods of sun, windy and hot with the heavy thunderstorm. Then again, late. These thunderstorms can bring flooding, downpours, hail, and damaging wind gusts. The high is going to be 91 degrees, and the low is going to be 70 degrees tonight. On the Phoenix, we got 86 degrees right now with a high of 110. Hot with sunshine and patchy clouds. Tonight will be cloudy and very warm with a thunder shower in spots. That's a low of 91 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, we're looking at 38 minutes. 62 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 42 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 26 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 41 minutes. On to sports, White Sox lose to the Dodgers, 0-3. Cubs lose to the Giants, 4-5. That was yesterday. Now today, we got those games again. White Sox play the Dodgers at 7:10 p.m. The Cubs play the Giants at 8:45 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Twins at 8:40 p.m. tonight. Stanley Cup Final Game 7 was last night. The Panthers beat the Oilers 2-1, capturing the very first Stanley Cup. That's all I got for you, Chief.
The
Hal, if I'm not here the next couple of days, I'm out in San Francisco closing for the Cubs.
Oh, nice.
I'm liable to get the call. I mean, I got a little bit of eligibility left. You think I can pony up a knuckleball in the next few days? And there's no way I'm going to throw a fastball, but...
Well, if you can throw a knuckleball and it's windy, you can, well, I don't know, if it's too windy, then you might not be able to get across the plate.
I mean, at least I want to get it near the batter's box. I mean, I want to, you know, somewhere
well, Wakefield, man, that dude, I mean, he wasn't working at all throwing that knuckleball, and it was just unhittable, man. Holy smokes.
Yeah, but even those guys are throwing it 75 miles an hour. I don't know if I can do that. As a matter of fact,
yeah,
I know I can't.
Yeah, but when you're throwing 100 miles an hour, you know, 100 times in a game, that really puts some wear on your arm. But when you're throwing it, you know, 70, and it's kind of fluttering around like a butterfly, I think he was the key to the Red Sox World Series because he just sucked up those innings, man.
Yeah, they suck up the innings. Well, Wilbur Wood.
He can go every day, three or four innings.
What would they pay Wilbur Wood? I'm going to say, you know what, Ricardo, if you do me a favor, look up Wilbur Wood. I'm going to say 1 year he was 300 and some innings. I think he was 21-20 was his record.
Was he a knuckleballer?
Oh, no.
Okay.
His career ended because somebody had a line drive back there and shattered his kneecap.
Huh.
That couldn't have felt good.
I find it interesting that knuckleballers are really not very highly prized in Major League Baseball. I mean,
nobody wants to catch them. They're easy to run on.
Yeah.
And they can be a little inconsistent, but...
Yeah.
But they used to have knuckleballers that were relievers.
Yeah.
Hoyt Wilhelm was one of the best relievers ever. He was a knuckleball guy.
Well, you know,
Eddie Fisher.
What I find interesting is when you get into those extra innings, like 17, 18 innings, and you got guys coming in from outfield pitching, they don't do a bad job, right? They don't really do a bad job. It's kind of interesting.
I see Wilbur Wood right here has 164 wins, 156 losses. Yeah. Is that the stats you wanted?
Well, no, I assume there's 1 year where he was like almost, was it almost 400 innings or some huge number?
Wow.
Innings pitched. It was, because he actually did one game and then started, he pitched three innings of the second game of the doubleheader. I mean, it was crazy.
Well, you know, one guy I really liked was Jimmy Moyer. He got better as he got older. I went to a game and I think he threw one pitch or two pitches at 86. The rest of the time, I mean, it seemed like he hit every digit on the radar gun from 64 to 86. I mean, he was just – he got hit up a little bit in the first inning. But, man, thereafter, they just could not time him at all.
I see right here, 1973, 24-20 with a 3.46 ERA. Is that the one you're looking
for? Yeah. How many innings did he pitch?
376
wow.
And two-thirds.
Wow. That's unreal. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. No. That's the year before actually. 1972 was 376, and then 359 was 1973.
That's unbelievable. He did the work of three pitchers, basically.
Impressive. Yeah. Wow.
And but did you ever see him when they, you know, who's the knuckleballer that Tim McCarver had to come in and catch, right? Because you can't reach for the ball because it's darting around. You ever play catch when anybody threw one at you? You gotta reach for it. The thing's not there. It's right next to you.
Dude, I couldn't hit a curveball, let alone a knuckleball.
Well, I mean, you sit there, you think it's not doing anything, and all of a sudden it moves.
Yeah.
I used to try to throw a knuckleball with a 16-inch softball, but you'd pitch with it. You could get it to move a little bit. I mean, not enough. It was a 16-inch ball. But with Tim McCarver, his thing was it's coming in so slow that it dies at the plate. You just get the mitt, you put the mitt down, and let it fall into the mitt. Anyway.
Right.
Anyway, what
curveballs? I couldn't hit it, man. I was like the guy Serrano in Serrano?
I can't. What did he say? I can't hit crooked ball or what was it?
I needed Joe Boo to hit that curveball.
Joe Boo. Kevin just sent in. Bob Uecker said it was easy to catch a knuckleball. Wait till it stops rolling and pick it up. Anyway. We're going to be tossing all kinds of economic stuff around in this debate Thursday night. I don't want to drink heavily, no, but I probably should. I don't do gummies. Maybe I should do some gummies for this debate or something. I've never done those things either, the hooch things. Anyway.
Well, it's going to be entertaining, that's for sure.
Well, that's Well, what? Where are we, when you look at the numbers, Hal? And I'm going to do something I shouldn't do here, but I'm going to kick up the debt clock here. And you're our overall economist maven. I don't know if you know that or not, but you are.
Oh.
We danced around the subject as we talked about knuckleballs and everything else, knuckleballs and knuckleheads, huh? We've danced around the subject. Right now, we've got $34.8 trillion in national debt.
Yeah.
It's probably a little less than that because there's sometimes they count it twice. But there's also this other off balance sheet stuff where the national debt grows faster than the budget. The Treasury deficit would lead you to believe. In other words, this year there'll be like $1.3 trillion short, but the national debt's going to go up like $1.9 trillion, right? Which nobody can quite figure out which is on the balance sheet and what isn't. Let's forget all that. But right now, if you look at these numbers and you put you and me, should we take Carl with us? We'll take Kevin with us because somebody's got to critique us. Maybe even bring Ricardo. What the hell? Well, all of a sudden, we're the new Federal Reserve. And you look at these numbers in front of you. You look at the debt numbers. You look at the Defense Department. They need probably more stuff because we're fighting all these different kind of wars we didn't think we were fighting. And you got to destroy her out in the middle of the ocean. You got to service the damn thing, right? We've got a national debt that's pushing interest is now almost $880 billion a year. If we look at the numbers, where is there room to improve? I don't know how much what kind of movement you can make here, with I think you're locked into these numbers somewhat. I mean, I don't know how you're gonna go back down to 1% and drive the market. I mean, these moves that people want these guys to do? I don't know. I think they're locked out of them.
Yeah.
The only number here I think you could appreciably change, and boy, you'd have to take people out in cuffs and change the way the world is. You got to do something about this medical cost. You can't be paying $1,000 for a drug that costs somebody 5 hours to make. I don't care what the patent law says. You just can't do it. Somehow or another, you got to break that stranglehold.
You got to break the government's protection of the medical monopoly. Yep. I mean, my brother Ryan was talking about this on Facebook, and Ryan was a blue collar Democrat up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I don't know, maybe he was listening to my tweets or maybe he was listening to the show, but Ryan went into the doctor's office and because his son hadn't used, they were going to get a physical for him for his college football, right?
Okay.
And he goes into the doctor's office and they say, well, we dropped you as a customer or a client because you hadn't used our services in over a year. Now, if a monopoly can do that, right? A monopoly can treat people like that, right? If there was a market, if there was a free market in medical care, they wouldn't have done that. They would have cherished that customer. And so what we have to do is we have to break the monopoly that the government has created in the medical institute. That's all we have to do in terms of healthcare is break that monopoly. Allow Walmart to offer healthcare services. Allow Amazon to offer healthcare services. Walmart is not going to hire a quackpot doctor. They're going to hire really qualified doctors, right? Because they don't want to be sued, right? But if anybody can solve healthcare costs rising like they are, it's something like a Walmart or an Amazon. So we have to break these monopolies that government has created. And doctors and nurses who enjoy this protection, their monopolies enjoy the protection of government, are not going to be happy with it because their salaries are inflated by that.
I think you're correct in the direction you're going, but you're a little off on who you're aiming at.
Yeah,
the doctors are no longer the highest paid people here.
Oh no! I mean, only in a system like the university system and the medical system are where these administrators benefit mightily from these protections that the government provides them. They protect them from competitors, right? And you can only get that in such a system. So that monopoly has to be busted. We got to get rid of these con laws that prevent entrepreneurs from opening up a competing business, hospital care, across the street from another hospital. We have to get rid of these con laws. We have to get rid of these monopoly-making policies and regulations. That's what we have to do. And until we do that, healthcare costs are going to continue.
Well, they're already they're incredibly high here. They're double the interest on the national debt, and they're double the defense.
Yeah.
Now, you want people taken care of, but I can't. And there's no, I mean, no doctor now can afford to be on his own. He can't handle the insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I mean, my
insurance is not insurance. Insurance is a payment system like EasyPass.
No, what I'm talking about their malpractice. They have to be part of a group.
Yeah. Order,
and yet, when then all of a sudden the group, I think that most places, if you went for a doctor visit, and you handed the guy $100, he'd probably be happier than he is now.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Because I mean, it ends up costing a lot more, and there's so many other fingers in the pie, he doesn't even get the $100.
Yeah.
I mean, it needs to be, but how do you, when you allow a city like Chicago, and we got to be, you know, we're not unique, to scrunch itself down to maybe three or four major hospital groups, and they pretty much control all the walk-in care places, they control everything. After 40 years of that, how do you turn around and say, no, that's not what we're doing anymore? How the hell do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I had a neighbor in North Carolina, and he had his dog in this 8x8 cage, basically, right? Chain link fence cage. And the dog never came out of that cage. So that's all the dog knew. He knew that his dinner and his water came twice a day, right? Now, the neighbor... Suppose the neighbor hypothetically dies and leaves.
Or somebody killed him for maltreatment of the dog.
Yeah. So suppose that happens.
Don't tell Audrey this, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah. What happens to that dog if that cage is left open and that water and that food doesn't come? The dog is going to stay in the cage expecting that water, that food to come, right? And when he gets really, really hungry, he's going to, like, stick his head out of that cage. But you know what? Once he gets out of that cage, his life is going to be so much better, right? He's going to have he's going to have fun with the female dogs. He's going to find his food. He's going to find his water. And that's the analogy I'm using for this. Right now, we're in a cage. We've been told since birth that this is the way the world works, and we don't know any other world. We are Brooks in Shawshank Redemption. We are institutionalized, believing that we have a market system. We have a neo-mercantilist system where government has created monopolies everywhere. And monopolies don't have to be responsive. They can charge incredible prices. And those rents go to either the salaries of the administrators, the maintainers of those monopolies, or they go to the politicians to continue in the form of maybe campaign contributions. So we've been conditioned to think this is the best version of our world, and it's just not.
Well, plus
there is a better world.
Plus, you get the. This is not. Well, it'll be a criticism on some of the people, because I was listening to some guys talking last week or 2 weeks ago. These are the. They're the manly men, right? You know what I'm talking about. They're like the football.
Yeah, the ones that would probably be considered to have toxic masculinity on most college campuses.
Yeah, these are the men. They're all like the football coaches from local high schools, and one of the guys is an alderman from the South Side, and I'm like, and they're just, you know, they're the manly guys, which is fine with me, except they mentioned some guy's name, and I just happened to, you know, I still got pretty good hearing from the trading floor. I mentioned some guy, and one of the guys, oh, he's like a friggin' liberal. Okay, so we tossed that guy into the scrap heap because he's, right, and somebody else was a socialist. I mean, anybody who would debate me that I'm like a socialist or something or other after spending 20 years on a trading floor really is out of their mind, because nobody's more of a competitive markets kind of guy than me, except for maybe you. I mean, whatever we have here, I can't even put a name on it. How would you describe this medical system? Anybody who thinks this is capitalistic?
It's not at all.
I don't see how it's much better than the socialist system. I mean, it depends on who's running the socialist system, I guess. But I mean, I don't know what it is. I can you even put a name to it?
Well, Mexico. I mentioned this before. My brother Rod went down to Mexico to have his implants put into his mouth, right? His teeth implants. dental implants. And I asked him a bunch of questions when he went across the border. He said that there were all kinds of dentist offices, from, you know, teeth pullers to the high-end dentists that you would, high-end dentists that you wouldn't even see in America. You have this gambit of dental services. You have this gambit of pharmacies, right? They have a market system in Mexico. Ours is a mercantilist, monopolistic, government-created monopoly system.
Yeah, it's bordering on fascist,
You know, I've been watching a show on Netflix called Ozarks. Now, I wish it didn't have all the sexual gratuity in it, but man, is it a lesson in how?
Why'd you take those parts out and send them around? You'd probably sell them.
Yeah.
The sex parts.
I'm telling you, that Netflix show by Jason Bateman is just, to me, it feels spot on.
You probably got 10 listeners now signing up for Netflix so they can see the sex parts.
I'm telling you, he's revealing the truth in what goes on in, like, say, the gambling and the drug war. He's just sharing it with the world.
Oh, yeah.
Drug war, I guarantee these cartelists, the cartels, they want the drug war. They want the heavy regulations and the heavy taxation on legal marijuana in in California, New York City. They want it.
In Illinois, they actually are growing places where they have to be near. They can walk in any one of these stores. I know a guy in the business. And if you pick out, you know, some hooch, you're going to roll a doobie with it. They can analyze that, and they can tell you what plant it came from at what place.
Yep, yeah.
They got, speaking of which, one of the guys, I actually had an adult beverage with him last night. We were talking about, I know what I want to talk to you about. Oh, God. But he and his fiancé, they're older, but they're engaged to be married. They love going on these cruises, right? So they go to Mexico. They go on the west coast of Mexico, and they go on a cruise, and they get a spot where you get, like, a Jeep tour. You got to make sure you don't go off the road, because you'll end up in some cartel guy's driveway. So they end up with this drugstore. The guy, he walks in, and the guy goes, "Hey, you got any problem with the, you know, dis a dis, meaning, you know, can you have any problem, you know, having sex?" The guy goes, "Nah." He had a whole row of stuff. From Viagra to every drug known to man for like 1/120th the cost here. Come on, you should try all this stuff. Guy keeps saying he doesn't need it, whether he does or he doesn't, I don't want to ask, but he goes, the guy had a huge smorgasbord of this stuff at like nowhere near the cost of here.
Yeah, they have a market system there. We do not have a market system. Rod spent, I think, $1,200 for his dental implants. That same procedure in Clarkson, Washington, would have cost him $12,000. To me, that 10 times factor,
yeah,
is the monopoly price that government has created with its rules, regulations, and licensing.
Well, without a doubt. And well, next week we'll have some more time. The guy in the building here had a hernia surgery, and he had a choice. I guess we got time. He had a choice. The other one we could save for next week. He had a choice of either going someplace. I actually went online and did some research. There are places where he could walk in and tell them what he needed. This, you know, it was a single hernia, one of those things. It's no big deal if it's not on you, kind of thing. For the machine to do it was like $3,000, and for somebody to do it, you know, at a good place was like $2,500. Now his deductible is $5,000, so the hospital wanted $9,000. Of which case, he had to put up $5,000 for the deductible. And he says to me, "What should I do?" I'm sitting here with my little calculator, and I'm, you know, usually pretty good at this stuff. You know what, Hal? They're so friggin' sneaky. I think it was like a break even. Mm-hmm. Because you're almost better off paying the $5,000 rather than the $3,500 in case something else happened to his wife or a couple of one of his kids play soccer. Because now you've blown your deductible up.
Yeah.
So you're really better off because of the way that things worded. Let's put it this way: you're neutral in paying the $9,000 or $9,500 versus the $4,000.
Yeah.
Now, if it was December and he hadn't used any of his deductible, I'd probably say make a bet on nothing bad happening for 2 weeks and go get it done some other place for $4,000 or $3,500. Yet they are so sneaky at this. Oh, guess what? Somebody told me last night. I'm arguing with these two guys. Imagine that, me arguing. One's an attorney, one's in a mortgage business. these are intelligent men, or at least I think they are. Guess what I'm arguing with them about? This will blow your mind as a libertarian economist. There's a rumor afoot, a movement afoot, because of who's the guy with the long hair and long blonde hair, the quarterback? What the hell's his name? Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Evidently he's getting $55 million a year. So now the owners want to have a salary cap on quarterbacks, because if they pay the quarterback that much, they don't have enough money left to pay the other guys because of the salary cap. Yeah. These guys are talking about what a great idea that is, and I go, you guys just get a lobotomy? What are you talking about? How do you have a place that's is a monopoly to start with, a bunch of owners that are cartels? The idea of having a salary cap in the first place is so anti-American, I can't go there. And now you want to have a salary cap on each position so you can pay the other guy. Where are you guys, in the sewer? They're looking at me like I had three heads, Carl. What do you mean? We got to have parity in the league. We got to be able to pay our other guys. I said, first of all, who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? You're not a shareholder of the Bears. I mean, anyway.
Yeah, for some reason, sports and universities and hospitals just get a pass. They just get a pass. They can be as anti-capitalistic as possible, anti-competition, monopolistic, and they just get a pass.
Yeah, nobody cares. Yeah. Well, we want our team to be able to pay the tackles too. Well, tell your guy not to pay the quarterback so much. Yeah, but somebody else is. I mean, these guys, we're talking about people with advanced degrees, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. What about the draft? I mean, first of all, the draft shouldn't be there. I mean, what? Anyway.
It's part of that cage that we're in, right? This is the only world we know. We think it's the correct world, right? We've never known a different world, right?
Well, we do in some. If you trade corn or soybeans, that's the competitive world.
Yep. Or if you buy fast food, right?
Yeah.
McDonald's got to compete against Burger King, right?
Well, not as much as it was before COVID, when all the old mom and pie shops too. Yeah. Hey, but have a good. How many more field trips you got going this summer?
Well, today's the last day of school, so I'm picking the kids up, and then we're going to put them into this quote-unquote free Brooklyn basketball program for the summer. Hopefully it's free, right? Usually when they say it's free, it's not free.
Well, as I used to say to some of the guys on the trading floor, if it's free, it's for me. That's futures up 9. That's futures up 81. Take care of yourself, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
That's all, folks.